This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Living free.
Thanks to the Redson Frequency Radio crew for another great show playing tracks and chatting with Collingwood artists. Welcome to Living Free, a one-hour show in which we highlight one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drugs, alcohol, gambling and food addictions. Our guests share their recovery story and highlight that shared experiences save lives. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM dial, or 3CR Digital, or maybe even live streaming on 3cr.org.au. My name's Michael. Today, I've got a guest, Carol, to come in and share her experience of recovery from alcoholism with the help of Alcoholics Anonymous. But before we do that, I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge that this land was stolen and sovereignty was never ceded. Also, please note that the Living Free show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm and family violence. So please consider your well-being and that of others while listening. Welcome, Carol. Thanks for joining me in the studio today.
Oh, thanks very much, Michael.
You're a regular here now. You've been in here, had a chat to us in 2020 and again in 2023. And today we just thought we'd try something a little different and we'd talk about, we're both members of Alcoholics Anonymous and what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for us and what it looks like for someone who might, be driven in by their drinking, because it's certainly, no one got in because they drank too much coffee. And people come to Alcoholics Anonymous because it looks like they've got a drinking problem. And we're just going to, we'll ask you, maybe you could share what it looked like at the end, like you've told your story on the program a couple of times. So what did it look like? What did your life look like at the end of your drinking?
Yeah, well, thanks very much, Michael. What did it look like at the end? Well, it's pretty hard to describe. I lived a life of fun, camaraderieship, enjoyment, never knowing or never, suspecting that I had a problem, but it was in the later stages of my drinking that, repeatedly unforeseen things would happen. And I'd vow and declare, well, I won't do that again. I won't drink with them people. I won't go there and, I'll change my playmates and, I'll do this, that and the other, but it never really held water because the alcohol for me would always come first and foremost, and I never anticipated that I'd never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, to be honest. But I just found myself that I drank copious amounts of alcohol. And I loved the euphoria. I certainly loved the effect. And
was it still having the effect at the end? Were you still?
There was no effect whatsoever. I was drinking, despite myself. I was drinking because I had to drink. The compulsion, the absolute urges to, I found myself that. I vowed and declared I'd never drink. I'd never become a morning drinker. I'd sort of put pen to paper and think, well, I won't drink past 12 o'clock, and I won't do this and I won't do that. But I just found myself that the morning drink, crept in, and
it's sort of insidious, isn't it? It doesn't look like I didn't make a decision one day that I'm going to drink in the morning. It's just that the nights got longer and then the mornings were there, and that physical thing that I have it into my body still, makes it impossible eventually for me to not pick it up in the morning. Like I'm still got it in me from the day before.
That's absolutely correct. And I never anticipated that it would, get hold of me, and I never anticipated that I would have to rely on alcohol for just about everything that I ever did in life. I started out, and you know, as I've explained, that it wasn't like that. You know, I went to work and I worked hard, and my rewards were at the end of the day, I'd have a few sherbets, or I'd have, you know, catch up with this person or that person, and you know, but slow, progressive, insidious, cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. And yeah, it took hold of me at quite a young age, and I just went with it. You know, everyone I ever knew in life, everyone I ever associated with, you know, we all drank.
So the social side of it had sort of dropped off. That was my experience, that it was very social to start with, because brings down my inhibitions and allows me to interact with other people comfortably. And,
yes.
And but at the end, that's not what it looks like. Like, I know for me, if you weren't drinking in my car and you weren't drinking in my garage, you weren't drinking with me.
Yeah.
I couldn't go out in public and drink because I didn't know what was going to happen.
Well, I never thought that I'd end up, you know, as a woman alcoholic, I never thought or anticipated that I'd end up behind closed doors, you know, drinking. And it got to the stage where I couldn't even set foot out of the front door to get to the letterbox without having a stubby in my hand or a glass in my hand. And, you know, my premises was, you know, I had alcohol planted everywhere.
Planted. It's not hidden. It's planted. I love that.
Yeah.
I want to use that.
I certainly did all, you know, all of that. And, yeah, I couldn't even, you know, go down to like the supermarket without having, you know, a skin full. And
absolutely get that. I had a Gatorade bottle of vodka and cordial with a skin around the outside, and I drank it like a sippy cup, like a child. And
yeah.
It was in my car, it was in my hand when I did supermarket shopping, when I picked the kids up from school. Anywhere I went, it was with me, because I was a top up, just continually topping up to stay drunk.
Well, that's the way that I lived my life. And I wasn't brought up like that. You know, I had a reasonably sort of an education. Well, I wouldn't say sort of. I had an education. But again, you know, I was always to find people that drank in a fashion that I acquired. And if they didn't drink the way I drank, well, bad luck, you know. I'd just move on to the next crew. Or, as it's been mentioned, you know, I became like an isolated, you know, drinker, and I'd frequent different, you know, bottle shops.
Yep.
Because I thought they might get to know me.
You're one of their best customers. They were waiting for you to come back.
And they'd say, well, you were in here yesterday, and, you know, and I'd say, oh, you know, I'd make up, you know, concoctions, and I'd say, well, I'm having a party, or I'm having this one over or that one over. And I'd be absolutely lying to myself, and I knew full well that I was lying to them. And, yeah, so I just did the frequent, you know, bottle-o run. And
I had a guy in Heidelberg, yeah, that I used to go to, and he didn't ask. Like, it was great. So I went there every day, because his name's Lou. I think he still has the bottle shop there in Oriel Road. And and he didn't ask. Sometimes he'd go, I've got this special and I've got one for you. And
yes.
Because he knew I was going to be there every day, but he never asked about how much I drank or anything else. And I loved it, because I didn't have to bottle shop, you know, like doctor,
yeah,
shop. I didn't have to go round and round and round. I went, this guy's never asking me. He's not giving me the sideways look. It's okay if I buy here every day. And
yeah,
it's because I'm spending, you know, I'm buying a bottle of vodka every day. And,
yes,
and then I think, well, I really should buy it in bulk. But, yeah, I just, because the shame that goes with it at the end when you're drinking against your own will.
Oh, definitely. And that's how I found there was shame. I believe that's part and parcel of the illness, you know, shame, guilt, remorse, and the cycle of it, you know, that you're drinking against your will. You're drinking to combat how you're feeling and how you're thinking. And, yeah, I was absolutely cherry ripe by the time I found, well, it was a friend of mine, you know, who found, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous for me, and I'm very indebted and grateful to that person today. And it's been many, many years. But, yeah, I mean, I used to rock up to her place at 3 a.m. with boxes of alcohol, and I'd be smashing on her door, and I'd be demanded to be let in. And, yeah, it was at the time, I just thought that was the way you went, and I thought I was having a good time. But then the blackouts started to creep in, and I'd found myself, she'd gone to bed, and I'd be unconscious at her kitchen table. And, you know, as many a time police were called in, I had to be escorted, you know, out of her premises. It didn't start out like that, trust me, you know.
Did you have responsibilities at that? Like at the end, where did you have responsibilities?
I did. I had a young child. I think she was probably only about 8 at the time. And I used to drag her along because my friend had a son and they used to play together. So I really believed within my deepest, darkest soul that I was being an absolute, really good mother. And I was lying to myself because it was just about the alcohol. You know, I would have done anything to get alcohol, and I did, you know. And I'm not, I know I'm on radio, but I'm not proud of the fact that the things, that the lengths that I went to achieve, you know, my intake of alcohol. And I went interstate, I went here, there and everywhere. Didn't start out like that, and I worked like a Trojan, and yeah, you know, accumulated this, that and the other. But, you know, along the way it was stripped away from me and I couldn't see it. It didn't bother me. You know, I remember way back when I was in, you know, another state, and I drank so much, and I had no recollection of getting on a bus and dragging a three-year-old child, you know, here, there and everywhere. I wasn't responsible, and I'm not proud of the fact, but over time I believe that through my grace of God, or my higher power, is my understanding that I've done my utmost through these steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to rectify my past. There's really only so many times you can say sorry, but, you know, the only person that I can see today that I was hurting was myself. I never knew how to live life. I never knew how to conduct myself. I could get a job, work hell for leather, and then come out of it, go and get absolutely sloshed, and then front up and go and get another, you know, job. And, you know, I'd dress up to the nines and pretend that there was nothing wrong. Yes. And I'd carry alcohol in my handbag.
The things we do is amazing. I can't explain my drinking to other people, yeah, who don't drink like I do. But the best way I can do it is to go, I had this situation where my wife went back to work, and when my kids were little, and this is the best way I can describe the definition of alcoholism is that I have to, you know, my wife started working at Vodafone, and she'd work a shift from like 7 till 12 at night. Mm-hmm. And I'd start drinking at about 4 in the afternoon. And if I discovered I was run out of alcohol, my kids were probably around about 8 and 6, 8 and 5. Mm-hmm. And I ran out of alcohol. I only had 2 choices because I'd started drinking. And the choices were, from where I lived, I had to do the 45-minute drive and to the only 24-hour bottle shop in Melbourne, which was in Windsor. And my choices were, do I leave the kids at home and then hope they don't notice I'm gone for an hour and a half and that they don't tell their mother that their dad was gone for an hour and a half? Or that would be irresponsible. Like, people don't leave their kids at home while they go out and do that stuff at that time of night. But the only best thinking I've got is that otherwise I put him in the back of the car with me and take him for the hour and a half and hope they don't tell their mother about the 90-minute road trip that Dad did after he'd already started drinking. And there's no third option. Mm. There's no, because a responsible person makes the decision that that they won't drink. Mm. They'll go, I've had enough. Actually, this isn't the appropriate time to be drinking, but I don't have that. I don't have that. That's what defines my alcoholism, is the fact that I've started to drink. And alcohol, I heard you share, I listened to your share from a couple of years ago, earlier today, but that alcohol gives me the ability to not give a damn. Mm. And so once I start drinking, I really don't care. And the words out of my mouth might say to my family, I love you, but my actions show you that I don't. Mm. And there, everything between my intentions and my actions is guilt. And I just feel guilty all the time because I can't control how much I drink and I can't not drink.
Mm.
And that's alcoholism for me. And that, at the end, it's not about this social thing of going out and partying and all that. It's all about I've got to get it in me and I've got to manage the consequences. And then I give up on the consequences in the end. I just go, I'm going to die this way.
Mm.
And I don't take responsibility for anything.
Mm. Yeah, it's just, it's horrific. You know, it's absolutely horrific. And I think, you know, if anyone's listening today, especially women, you know, it's one of the hush-hush, you know, diseases. You know, it takes years to come forward and truly admit what you are because it's been mentioned by Michael that, you know, the shame and the absolute guilt, you know, that we impending doom that we go through. And, you know, it doesn't matter where you live. You can live in Brighton, you can live in Hawthorne, you can live out in the sticks, you know.
It doesn't discriminate, does it? It doesn't matter what your job is. Doesn't matter what we're saying. It's just like cancer. It's not sitting there going, I'll just take you, you and you. It just takes anybody. And, you know, I have no idea how I got it, although I can look at my family and go, there's a good chance it came from there.
Yeah. You know? Oh, for sure. But, you know, I think that we're the lucky ones that after many years of torturing our bodies and, you know, abusing ourselves that we come to the realisation, and that's the first step, that, you know, I am totally powerless over alcohol. And even after many years, you know, life can still at times be unmanageable. But, you know, it's, for me, I think that I'm extremely fortunate, you know. And it's been mentioned, you know, in the beginning about what was it like at the end. Well, I could go on for the next 10 years because, you know, to go through your life and arrive at a point in time and you know with your inner self that one more teaspoon of this and I'm not going to be around, you know.
We might come back, actually. We're going to sort of talk about the problem. Like the problem is at the end that there's, I can't stop, but I want to. I really, really want to stop. And so we might come back after some music and some announcements and we'll talk about what happened next and then we'll get to what it looks like now. Welcome back. You're listening to Living Free on 3CR Community Radio, 855 on AM radio or 3CR digital radio or maybe live streaming on 3cr.org.au. Okay, before the break, today we're talking to Carol about alcoholism and her recovery and our recovery through Alcoholics Anonymous. And before the break, we talked about what drinking looked like at the end and at the end of our drinking. And in this break, we're just going to talk about the introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a weird place to show up. Like it is, no one gets there on a roll. That hasn't been my experience of people got there and go, thank God I've made it to AA. You know, after 28 good years of, you know, drinking, that my plan was to be in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew by the sign out the front that said AA that it was in Athletics Australia, and you know, I could tell by the people smoking out the front of the church at 8 o'clock at night, and but no one, you know, we get there and it's a bizarre place to be, like, and we walk in the doors and the door looks really small. So what was your experience of coming first up to go to AA?
Yeah, thanks very much, Michael. Glad to be back. Yeah, look, my experience was I'd come off a bender. I was violently sick and I was led by the hand into one of the rooms of, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked in there and I was absolutely dumbfounded. There was about 100 people in there. And I was just consumed. There's no words to, you know, describe it. I was consumed with a lot of fear, a lot of shame, guilt. And then a person just put their hand out and said, welcome. And I'd never been welcomed anywhere. I'd been welcomed out the back door, but, you know, it was the first place that I felt a tad, you know, comfortable. And I sat down and I was shaking, I was shivering, and a person walked up to me back in the day and they gave me half a cup of tea. So I was shaking that much that it spilt all over the floor. And they said, you've arrived, you're home now, you can take your hat and coat off. And I thought to myself, the way I drank, I didn't even have a hat and coat. So this person came up to me and they put their jacket around me, and I thought that was so comforting. And then I was taken in by the stories. You know, they said just sit down and have an open mind, and that's about all I could process. And they gave me a meetings book and, you know, a couple of phone numbers, and I hang on, you know, I hung on to them like grim death, you know, and they gave me some literature. And, yeah, I, you know, for an hour and a half, I shook and I shivered my way through that meeting.
So the meeting sort of set up in the, just to give a bit of background, because most people won't have been to an AA meeting, but you sort of go in and people are invited to get up and share their story, and it's about what I was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And it's a big show and tell operation. We get up there and because you look at these people and they've got a bit of, they might only have 2 years of sobriety up, but they don't look like the person they're describing from 2 years earlier. But you'd know from the honesty in their shares when they're telling you about what it was like they had to have lived it. Like there's no way you could make that shit up. Yeah. And that because you're listening to it and going, oh my, that's exactly like me. Like, because it's not the sort of conversation you have with normal people. Like the water cooler conversation at work on a Monday wasn't, what'd you do on the weekend? I go, well, I wet the bed. You know, that isn't what I say when I go to work on Monday. I'm so not telling the stories. And these people get up and they just tell it how it was. And I go, oh my God, I'm not alone. It's an amazing experience, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. So, yeah, I just found myself that I felt that I started to feel like I belonged a bit, you know, and even though I sort of recoiled and stepped back and, you know, older sober members were extremely warming to me, but I still didn't gel to it, you know. I just, I've always been quite an independent person and I was raised, you know, not to, you know, if you want to do something, you do it yourself. And I was, it was just totally foreign to me. So as I said, you know, the next meeting I went to, I was told to sit in the first three rows.
Intensive care.
And that's what I exactly did. And I had my head buried, you know, within my hands, and I was looking at the floor. And I couldn't even lift my head up through the guilt that I felt and the shame, because I found that every one of those speakers that got up were telling my story. They were telling my life. And I thought to myself, how do they know so much about me?
Yep.
Have they written a journal, or have people been taught? How do they know, you know? And they did know, you know, and that's what kept me coming back, that I knew deep down inside that I am, you know, like, you know, I am an alcoholic. And I would have choked on the fact, you know, back in, you know, in the day. But, yeah, it was a life-saving story. You know, there's no other way to put it. So, you know, if you are drinking or you're thinking to you know, cross that line and come to AA, you know, you'll be more than welcomed. And it certainly saved my life. I would not be alive today after 35 years of continuous sobriety, God willing, if I hadn't have found the rooms of, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous.
Sorry to interrupt. Isn't it amazing that change of thinking where I go, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm not an alcoholic, and all of a sudden I am an alcoholic and I have been for 25 years. Like that's such a huge change to not being one at all. So then I can actually admit the fact that it, probably for the last 25, 30 years I've drunk this way and it's been out of control. And that change that just comes from listening and identifying with the same problem, because, you know, I'm never going to admit it if I'm the only one who's got it.
True. But, yeah, I was told just put the cotton wool in my mouth and to have, you know, the open mind and just, you know, listen. And I was that rattled. I couldn't, you know, retain anything. And they sent me down to, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but they sent me down to Fitzroy, a bias.
Yep.
And you know, I had, I found after many, many years of drinking, I had front lobe damage. And, you know, what does a good alcoholic do? I mean, they just go around and, you know, celebrate that. And that's what I did. But, you know, I just found myself that, you know, if I could find a loophole or way around things, that I myself would do that. But I've, over time and working these steps to the best of my ability, I've had to just let all of that go and understand that I really don't know anything, you know.
Because you come in these preconceived ideas about what life should look like and how, and but no skill set to actually do any of the things that I really want to attain in life. And I think they told me that that I was going to get an opportunity to live the life beyond my wildest dreams. Mm. And the only thing that's really changed is my dreams, is what I dream about. Because I thought that I needed to have things, I needed to own things, I needed to have prestige, or this was going to make my life okay. And AA has shown me that actually what's really cool is being able to put my head on the pillow at the end of the night and go at the end of the day and go, oh, I didn't do too much harm today. Yes. I realised like I didn't scream at the people who didn't do what I thought they should. And actually I was a pretty good road user today on a good day. Not every day. But, you know, and all these little basic stuff. And I go, actually, that's the stuff, the day-to-day stuff that actually I had no skill set in. Just doing the basics of paying my bills, you know, showing up when I said I was going to show up.
Well, I found for myself, Michael, that, yeah, they used to say, you know, simple things, you know, keep it simple. And I was such a, you know, a complicated, you know, human being, like most of us, I guess. I looked for prestige. I looked, you know, for materialistic things and this, that and the other to fill the hole in the soul. And it never, ever worked because, you know, the only thing that works for me is my connection with the rooms and the people in AA and having, you know, it might be a bit daunting, but having a higher power. And, yeah, I mean, it's a God as one understands it to be. But,
What's the good thing about AA is it doesn't tell us what God is. No. It just tells you might have a need for one. It says, hey, you running your life.
I can't
you,
do
you're,
it.
You're a pretty crap job. Let's look at the evidence. The evidence is that I'm in AA.
Yes.
Like, as I said, it's not the peak of my existence. So no. Perhaps you might want to try something different, Michael. And then and I go, okay. And they, you know, it might be, we laugh about the fact that God could be a group of drunks or it could be a good orderly direction or anything really, just anything that isn't Michael using his own brain to think his way into the next situation, because the history is that my thinking has got me here and my actions based on my thinking.
Well, that's what they used to say to me, Michael, that, you know, you really don't know anything at all, you know, because your best thinking got you through the doors, so you better just sit on the seat and shut up, you know.
So did you do that?
With a bit of hissing and bucking and, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I didn't have a choice. I knew that if I was to be unfortunate enough, and still know it today, that if I'd be unfortunate enough to go back out, I may be a statistic or may not get back. So for me, you know, AA has certainly changed my world, changed my thinking, and, you know, it boils down to the individual. How much do you want this, you know? And I had to go to any length. You know, they said go to regular and frequent meetings, you know, step out of your comfort zone, go somewhere where it's broadening your, you know, horizons and things like that. And that's what I had to do. I wouldn't be alive if I just sort of sat back on my laurels and thought, well, I've got this.
Yeah, because that's been my experience. It's not a not drinking club. Like I come here because it looks like I'm going to hang out with all these people who don't drink. And the problem is that most of these people I wouldn't have drunk with anyway.
True.
And I go, oh, I don't. If the requirement is I have to like everybody in AA, I'm going to fail. And so I need to find something that's greater than the people in AA. Like that, I take a lot direction from a lot of people in AA, but also I need to find a power that's greater than that. And AA, the program of AA, has shown me that it's a program of actions I take. Mm-hmm. It's not about my wantingness and what I want to do. It's about my willingness to do the things I don't want to do. and show up in areas in my life that I don't really want to, but I should show up in. Like AA's taught me to be a parent. It's taught me to be, it's taught me parenting skills. It's taught me how to show up and be a good. So sometimes I go to work and everybody's work co-workers, and on good days they're colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
But lots of days they're co-workers, and yes. and I'm going to go those days anyway. And when they're not doing what I think they should, or and I need to be able to show up and do life like everybody else does, like everybody else's, because I can't afford to be sitting there in anger. I can't afford to be frustrated all the time, because if I'm frustrated all the time, I'm going to drink, and to drink is to die the way I drink, and so I need to avoid that thinking, that sort of thinking that gets me in self-pity, that sort of thinking that gets me back thinking about what they've done to me, the victim mentality, I need to be responsible.
Yes.
And it's shocking, because who wants to do the growing? I was a 13-year-old boy in the body of a 41-year-old man when I got there.
Yes.
And I got to learn how to do all this stuff. Wow.
Well, I think it's the last of the Pandora's, diseases, we're the last to know that. Well, I was the last to know within myself that I was, an alcoholic. And as it's been mentioned by Michael about the, it's like I got to AA and I had the mentality probably of a 16-year-old in a 35-year-old body or something, and I was trying to act like an adult and I didn't know, I didn't have the skills and...
Oh, absolutely. I remember I had 6 months of not drinking. I remember jumping up and down on the end of my wife's bed, demanding my rights as a husband. And the best I've got is I'm going to hold my breath till my face turns blue. And that's as mature as it got. And I can look back and I'm like, I couldn't even blame the drinking for that. I just go, I cringe when I think about it now, because the heebie-jeebies just going, that was the best I had. The best maturity I had was just to go, but you gotta. And 42. You really should. You should get better than that. But I don't have it. I don't have any skill to do grown up. And AA certainly given me an opportunity to do grow up. We might take another break and we'll play some music and we'll come back and talk about what life looks like. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, regular donors are vital to keeping us on air. If you're willing to become a regular donor, please go to 3cr.org.au or call the station during business hours on 9419 8377. Today we're talking with Carol about alcoholism and her recovery through Alcoholics Anonymous, and we sort of joked about and laughed about the horror stories at the start about what it looked like in our drinking, and then the introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous and feeling a part of, and now we're going to just have a bit of a chat about what life looks like now. And so it's a 12-step program, and the steps are they're done in order, as is the way it was told to me. And I admit that I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. That I then come to believe that a power greater than me can restore me to sanity around, because the problem I really suffer from is that, not that when I drink it gets out of control, the real problem is that the insanity before I pick up the first drink, knowing what's going to happen next, and I do it anyway. And so I make a decision after having this admission that I'm going to live my life differently. And then what does that look like? I'm going to look at then how I'm actually living my life. And I go through a process of writing down actually what life looks like now and how I interact with other people. And I see that what the real problem I have is, and I'll read it actually straight out of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 52. And I'll be that guy who's quoting from the book. And it said... we were having trouble with our personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. And my experience was that I could make a living. I could just spend a lot more than a living. And we had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. And so we discovered that we got this separation from other people and we lack a connection. And so we see why our behaviours show that we've disconnected ourselves from others, and then we want to get reconnected to other people. And the program shows us how to get that connection, how to fit in among other people, not because we're trying to please them, not because we're doing it to be people pleasers or based in fear. We just want to be ourselves. We want to be an authentic version of ourselves and feel comfortable in our own skin and show up in the world. And take responsibility for our own actions through going back and making amends and trying to live life differently. And it's and opens up, the world just opens up. Has that been my experience? So what does it look like for you now, Carol? Big opening question.
Yeah, well, I'll try and explain it or condense it. It's certainly 100% true what you've said, Michael. I find for myself, yeah, my life is vastly different through working these steps to the best of my ability. I'm able to give away what was so freely given to me one day at a time. I never say never, you know, just because I'm here today, you know, nobody knows what's round the corner. But, you know, I've always found myself that I've stuck extremely close, you know, to the rooms and to the people of, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous when I'm asked. Life today, as I said, is vastly different. You know, I've got two grown sons still living with me at home. So that's a challenge within itself. But, yeah, I'm a much more, I guess, reserved person today. I'm much more quieter. I'm much more at peace, you know, inner peace. And, yeah, I just, I don't make any, you know, concrete plans, or I don't live in the future and I don't live in the past. You know, I've spent probably a lifetime, you know, making certain amends to certain people, but you know, I just find myself that I let all that go now. I've cleaned my side of the street. So yeah, I mean, I worked up, you know, right up until yeah, probably about 18 months ago, and I'm currently not working, so I've got more time on my hands. So when opportunities like this appear, you know, to come into this radio station and be of service, and that's what's asked of me of, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, that, you know, that if I'm asked to do service, that I do it. Yeah, so I won't go into the nitty-gritties of how my life is, but it's in no comparison. I mean, I was a pretty wild duck in my day. So, yeah, I've been able to clip my feathers and, yeah, just try and be a bit more. I was a type of alcoholic, you know, I'd say and do, you know, whatever I wanted without any consequences. I wasn't accountable to myself, let alone anyone else. Excuse me. And now, you know, that's all changed. I am accountable. I am trustworthy. I am honest. And that's certainly a 360-degree turnaround. And, yeah, I'm able to be present, you know, within my own life, which when I was drinking, I was in everyone's life. You know, I was meddling, certainly meddling in everyone's life, thinking that I had all the answers and just look at me, just ask me, you know. And it's not like that today. You know, I've learnt, you know, through these steps, you know, to mind my own business, to keep my trap shut unless I'm asked. And, you know, everyone has, you know, opinions, but, you know, I'm just going along the best way I can. And I'm thankful that at least today that I know what's wrong with me and that my illness is treatable. You know, the big book has been mentioned and, you know, that's certainly a stickler for me. You know, it's life-saving, but I know that if you're struggling or you're thinking of either returning to Alcoholics Anonymous or coming to have a squiz, you know, that you might have a bit of an open mind and see that, you know, there are some genuine people still around. And this program, if you are an alcoholic, works if you work it. As I mean, it's simple. I haven't travelled the world, although I wouldn't mind to, but, yeah, have to put the Tats Lotto numbers on maybe. But, yeah, I just find myself that whatever comes down the chute comes down the chute, and I'm open to suggestions today, which when I was drinking and even getting sober, you know, I had a very much closed mind. It was very opinionated and, you know, it's not like that today. I can see it from another person's angle. I can see because, you know, as alcoholics, we certainly read each other. We know, you know, we're able to gauge each other. And I just try to be there for the, you know, the newer member or even, you know, the older members. Sometimes just because you've got multiple years up doesn't mean that you're exempt or cured from drinking again, or it doesn't mean you don't have trials and tribulations in life like we all do because we're human. And but the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can take it off the wall in my everyday life. It's not there to hide the cracks in the wall. It's there to be taken down and, you know, to be put into place. And I believe for me, I was given a second chance at life. And why wouldn't you be grateful and thankful? You know, AA works, trust me. AA works without a shadow of a doubt. All you've got to do is come along, you know, sit down and just try and apply it in your everyday life. As a chronic alcoholic, I know for myself that I'm lucky to be alive. I wouldn't be breathing. There's no other way to put it. I tried all the institutions, the hospitals, the detoxes, this, that and the other, and nothing ever, ever worked. And I'm not here to promote, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just another example that this program can work if you want it to work, if you want to stop drinking. And that's all we want for the next sick and suffering alcoholic, is to reach out and try and be there for them.
Yeah, I guess it's a program of attraction. So, you know, the 12th step says that having had a spiritual awakening as the result of doing the steps, we tried to carry the message of hope to alcoholics and to practice the principles in all our affairs. And, you know, that my job is to be a good example of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I don't break my anonymity. I'm not wearing a sign that says I'm a member of AA. But, you know, if people who know me in my life, there's people who know me know I don't drink and know that I'm a member of AA. But that, you know, I used to be a slave to my thinking. You know, if I thought it, I did it.
Mm.
I thought it, I did it. And AA has given me this position to pause and to be able to, you know, I could take responsibility. And what responsibility is, the ability to respond rather than react. And I have this ability to respond and do nothing. And I never thought to do nothing was an action. And I'm like, just don't say anything. Don't do anything. Don't say anything. Don't have an opinion. Just to sit back and pause and do as little harm as possible and be a good example for the next person who's coming along. Because as you said, sometimes the suffering alcoholic is already sitting in AA. Mm. Like that was my experience. I was, you know, 7 years sober and I was convinced myself I wasn't an alcoholic. You know, maybe I was just a heavy drinker and I made a decision to stop and I was capable of making that decision. And I was lucky enough to get into enough pain again to go, okay, I need to have a new experience here. But AA is there for, you know, we'll finish up there and we'll talk about the fact that, you know, if you like to find out more about Alcoholics Anonymous, and you can phone them on 1-300-222-222, or you can go online to aa.org.au. Thank you very much for coming in. Oh, really, really, really good to talk to you.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it, Michael. It's been the highlight of my day, so thank you.
Awesome. So that's all the time we've got for today, and I'd like to thank Carol for coming in to the studios and sharing her experience of Alcoholics Anonymous recovery.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.